Welcome to Fit and Chips Chats. This is a podcast for women over 40 who are looking for sane and frank advice about their health and wellness, especially through menopause. I'm Amanda Thebe, the original resilient bitch and menopause guru. In my work as a personal trainer and nutrition coach, and through my own personal experience, it became obvious to me information about menopause and this curious phase of our life was so ridiculously hard to find. And that's why I started this podcast. Join me every week as I speak to health and wellness experts on hot topics that directly impact you. I've made it my mission to help you by exploding a few myths, presenting you with the facts, and hoping to inspire you to be a healthy, strong person just like me. If you like this show, please subscribe and leave a review. Then go and tell your friends, and then go and tell your husband, and then tell the neighbor, and then don't forget to visit me at fitandchips.com. And now let's get started on today's show. Hi, everybody. Welcome back to this week's episode of Fit and Chips Chats with me, your host, Amanda Thebe. Welcome back. This week on the phone, because I'm chatting with her on the phone, but on the podcast, I'm speaking to Diane Zabrink, who is the founder of the Menopause Support Campaign. I'm going to talk about that in a minute. She has this campaign called Make Menopause Matter. It's this the most amazing thing that she's doing over there. And it's going to be sort of like the mainstay of our conversation today. A little bit about Diane, though. She is a psychotherapist, menopause expert, and well-being consultant who specializes in working privately with women and couples, guiding and supporting them through menopause, midlife and beyond, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. Now, Diane comes from a place of personal experience, a bit like me and the other guests I have on the show, that then led her down this path of wanting to help women change the education, change the conversation, and just raise awareness about menopause. She's literally at the forefront of just changing the whole gamut in the UK. And I want to make that really clear to say that it's in the UK, because frustratingly enough, I don't see anything like that happening over here in the US or Canada yet. Maybe that's me. Maybe with Diane's encouragement, I can get something going there, because it's sorely needed. But without further ado, welcome Diane to the show. I can't wait to talk to you today.
Hi, Amanda. Nice to be with you.
It took a long time to get you on here. She was too busy for me. She kept canceling me because she had to go and see some member of parliament or something more important. But no, just jokingly. So, Diane, let's just talk about, you know, the why, because I think that's more important, like to get people to understand, you know what started all this for you? You know, why did you start this campaign?
Yeah, okay, lovely. So it'll be coming up for 7 years in July. I had to have a total hysterectomy, so womb, ovaries, and cervix. And neither before my surgery or after my surgery did anybody sit me down and explain the full range of possibilities of symptoms that might occur as a result of me no longer having ovaries and the lack of me being able to produce the majority of my natural estrogen. I had a little bit of information about HRT from many years before, when my mum actually had the same operation. But at the time she was given an HRT implant. And when I found out what that implant was made from, I was pretty horrified. So it was animal derived conjugated equine estrogen. It was just something that didn't sit comfortably with me. So I kind of thought that's all HRT was, and decided, because nobody had given me any information, that I wouldn't take it. So consequently, I decided that I would go down the route of herbs, vitamins, minerals, etc. Again, nobody had ever said to me, don't be ridiculous, there's no way that's going to be able to help a woman with no ovaries. Went to a London clinic where They sold me lots of herbs and minerals and supplements and said, yes, yes, you'll be fine. And cut a long story short, I wasn't fine. I was okay for about 3 months, but that was because I still had an element of natural estrogen in my body. And what I didn't know is as soon as that completely ran out, I kind of fell off a cliff. But for me, it was less physical and more psychological. So my
which symptoms, is something we hear a lot of, right? And that's, I think, the stuff that isn't spoken about as much, right?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. So my symptoms were all psychological, crushing anxiety. I would wake in fear and dread in the middle of the night if I could sleep at all. I was pretty convinced that nothing would ever be good again. Just this feeling that I was useless, hopeless, worthless. If this was what life was going to be like, I really didn't know if I wanted to be here anymore. Started to have pretty dark and scary thoughts. Didn't really share them with anybody, although my husband obviously knew that things were bad because he actually, he got my poor mum to come and stay with me during the day while he was at work, because he's since told me that he was worried about what I might do. But it got to the point where I got very close to putting my car in front of a lorry. And on the day, I had my four Jack Russells in the car. And bless their hearts, they're none of them any longer with us, but one of them basically barked at the right moment and sort of snapped me out of my thought process. And I was just absolutely horrified, drove home as slowly as I could, told my husband what I'd done, and he pretty much picked me up and took me to the doctors and said, you need to help her, and you need to help her now. And at any stage
had you been seeing a doctor during this or getting help? Or is this, I mean, after the surgery, was anybody at any stage telling you that these symptoms might be because of the surgery, because of the forced menopause? Did anybody tell you this?
So when I left the hospital, the only advice I was given was go and see your GP in 6 weeks' time. So I went to see the GP in 6 weeks' time, and I have to say that I had a great GP. The problem was a lack of information. Yeah. So I sat down in front of the GP and she said, we had a little conversation and she said, okay, so, you know, HRT. And I said, no, thank you. And that was pretty much where the conversation ended. Rather than me being told, well, these are your choices, this is what HRT is now. But to be honest, that should have been something that happened before my surgery at the hospital, but it didn't happen. It didn't happen afterwards. And I'm sorry to say, I don't know what things are like in the US, but here in the UK, I still counsel women on a very regular basis who've had the same surgery and still not been given the right information.
It's exactly the same over here.
Okay.
The same.
So essentially during that kind of intervening period between seeing her and getting to this horrendous place, I was just terrified of going back to the doctors because I thought all they were going to offer me was this HRT, this type of HRT that I didn't want to take because I didn't know there was a choice. And or antidepressants. And I didn't want to be on antidepressants for the rest of my life. So I thought that this was what it was and there was no choice because nobody had ever told me any different.
How isolated did you feel during all of this time?
That's a really good question. It was horrific. I think I was 44 at the time of my surgery, so quite early to be in menopause. So none of my friends were in the same situation. So, you know, sort of I couldn't talk to any of my friends about it. So essentially, while I was sitting up at 2 and 3 o'clock in the morning, you know, kind of madly searching the internet for answers, I came across this sort of hidden society of women who were all kind of reaching out saying, I feel so alone. I feel like I'm going mad. Nobody understands. I don't understand why I feel like this, et cetera, et cetera. And I thought, hang on a minute. It's not just me. There's literally thousands calling out for the same thing. Why are none of them getting any answers? Why can't I get any answers? And it was sort of, I did get to a really, I mean, you know, kind of, I spent a lot of my days sobbing, you know, curled up on my own, etc. And I have to say, my husband and my mum were absolutely amazing, and I probably wouldn't be here if it wasn't for the pair of them.
If you had that support, I was just going to say, when your husband took those steps, like bringing your mum in and taking you to the doctors, good for you. Good. I'm so happy you have that, because a lot of women don't have that support. It's very difficult for men to put themselves in our. I often feel sorry for them, because it's very difficult for them to put themselves in our shoes, and we can't even explain what's going on. How on earth are they? How are they supposed to know? But
And I often say that, lovely. You know, sort of this idea of, if we don't understand, how the hell are they supposed to understand? But yeah, you know, kind of, they were amazing. And when I think now about what I put them through, you know, it must have been absolutely horrendous to, you know, kind of not to feel that you're able to help. But I did, there was one particular day where I sort of thought, I'm desperate. I'm absolutely desperate for help. And I actually rang the GP surgery and said to the receptionist, is there some kind of support service, or is there somebody that I can talk to who can help me? Literally, I will pay whatever I can, and I will get there. I will, you know, whatever it takes. And she just said, I'm sorry, my dear, there's nothing like that. And that was kind of like the last straw for me, because I remember just kind of falling in a heap in the sofa, and I just sobbed.
Yeah.
Because I just thought, that is just hopeless. And it was kind of in a sort of, in a sane moment, and I'll be
really, I was going to say, but was that your turning point? Was that like the, because there's clearly like a fulcrum happens, right, where you get to the point where you're like, I got to come down the other side now. I have to do something about this.
I think, to be honest, I think it was a turning point, but it was kind of less a turning point as a personal thing, but more as a wider recognition of, you have got to be kidding me. Women are 51% of the population. They're all going to go through menopause, and you're seriously telling me that there's no support service? How the hell can that be? And I remember, once I'd stopped sobbing and etc., I remember saying to my husband, if I ever get through this, if I ever feel like me again, I'm going to make damn sure that I do something to change it. And I think that kind of was it, because it became wider than me. It was, no, this cannot be allowed to go on. How can it possibly be that we're in this situation? So it was a turning point, but it was a wider, you know, wider thing than just about me.
And so for you, it was interesting, because your story is a little bit different in the fact that you went to the doctor and she offered you actually a valid solution, whereas a lot of the time women will go to the doctor and don't get offered that as a solution. You know, they'll get offered antidepressants or something else, or, you know, their symptoms just don't make sense to the doctor, and they don't immediately think that it may be menopause. And, we hear these stories all the time, but your doctor, in fact, was a little bit more forward thinking. But the problem that you had was that you felt that it was more the isolation and lack of support, that you just felt like you were just on your own through this, and you didn't know what the hell was going on.
Yeah, and I think the thing is, you know, sort of the fact that I had incomplete information. So I knew about the type of HRT that my mum had taken, which was equine urine derived. I didn't want that, but I didn't know there was an alternative. And even when she sat me down and said HRT and I said, no, thank you, that was because I knew what I knew about HRT. She obviously knew a lot more, but we didn't have that conversation.
Yeah, it's nobody crazy.
Nobody said there is a plant-derived, body-identical estrogen and progesterone. If somebody had said that to me before I had my surgery, I would have started that immediately.
I had something similar happen to me. My story, I'm not going to go through it now, but I had a good 2 years of symptoms that were as well quite emotional depression, but then I also had migraines and a chronic fatigue, and it really did ruin my quality of life. And I went to had lots and lots of testing done by neurologists, by ear, nose and throat people, trying to work out what my vertigo was, etc. Mm. And it was my gynecologist that just said, this is perimenopause. He clearly saw it and just said, I can put you on HRT, or you can try an antidepressant because that can help with the migraines. And obviously I was depressed as well. We know that one of the antidepressants can help with the vasomotor symptoms as well. So I sat there and went, well, I'm not going on HRT. And he went, are you sure you don't want to talk about this more? And I went, I do not want to go on HRT. And I was the same as you. I am in full menopause now and I'm 48 years old, and I was 44 at the time. And literally at the end of my rope, and I just went on the antidepressants and went and met my husband afterwards. And he was like, I'm quite surprised that you've gone on antidepressants. I thought you wouldn't go on them. And I went, I'm desperate. Like, I'm desperate. Mm-hmm. And I'm certainly not going on HRT. And at the time I wrote an article about everything I was going through. I had the fitness platform. I wrote about it. Women, it's reached the tens of thousands now that people have read this article. And I started a Facebook group. And even through all of that, I still didn't fully understand HRT. It's only in the last 18 months that I've, like, and I'm in this, I'm the person that people are coming to, and I'm like, why isn't it so very, very clear? Why are we fighting doctors to get HRT? Why, you know?
Exactly, lovely. And this is the whole point of the campaign. It's about education, information, advice, and support. And women need to have this information before menopause comes along. And for some of us, slaps us square in the face, because the last thing you want to do when you're experiencing your symptoms, and for some women the last thing they feel they can do is actually go and find that information. So women need to have that information up front before menopause comes along. It's an absolute no-brainer for me.
I mean, think about it, when you were 16, well, I was 16, maybe I was a bit younger, my mum whisked me off to the health clinic, like, when we were going to go on the pill or whatever, and they give you, like, 8 leaflets all about the different types of pills you can have, and about, like, you know, Durex and things like that. And then when you're pregnant, they throw the information at you. There's so much there, and there's absolutely nothing. There's nothing at all that, and this, like, I feel like, For me personally, I went into menopause being very strong, very healthy, very self-aware of my body, and also very informed about most aspects of women's health and wellness, and didn't know any of this, of course, right? I've just made that clear. But I just think that there's just such a big missing piece of the jigsaw puzzle. And I know I was speaking to, we've had this conversation by email, that I was speaking on the phone to Avram Blooming, one of the co-authors of Estrogen Matters.
Yeah.
And he gave me a statistic that blew my mind. I already knew that GPs could opt out of, like, menopause training as part of their schooling. I knew that a lot of GPs weren't up to date on the current findings. What I didn't understand is in the US that just over 20% of obstetricians and gynecologists opt to study menopause. Mm-hmm. So if you're going to see a gynecologist in the United States, they may or may not even know anything about menopause. They may
That's
not have
the same here.
And I was like, are you what? Stop. Hold on. Stop. What? You know, that's got to be righted, that wrong.
Yeah. And that's a problem for women, because women immediately think, and rightly so, that a gynecologist will know about menopause. But that's absolutely not true. Not all gynecologists know anything about menopause. And, you know, sort of the thing with GPs, so one of the main aim of the campaign is that mandatory menopause education is introduced in the UK for GPs, because most of them have none. Unless they do some continued professional development, then, you know, it might be that they have no training on menopause when you sit down with them with your menopause symptoms. And again, it's an absolute no-brainer. We're 51% of the population. I can't think of something else that will happen to every woman. Every woman will not choose to or be able to have a child. Every woman will have menopause.
Yeah, puberty and menopause, they're the two things that we will all go through.
Absolutely.
If we're lucky, yeah. Hi guys, Amanda here. I'm just jumping in to ask you a quick favor. If you are enjoying my podcast, then I'd love you to leave me a review on either iTunes or Google Play. It helps me get in front of new listeners so I can keep making great content for you. And in return, I'd like to send you my Abs on Fire 12-week core-focused workout plan. All you need to do after you've done your review is simply email me at amanda@fitandchips.com and I'll send you the program straight away. Thanks, guys, for all your support. And now back to the show. And so let's just talk about the campaign now. So, I mean, you've touched on it. So I'd love you to just tell me, like, give me your elevator pitch for Make Menopause Matter. What is the campaign? What is your purpose? And, you know, what do you hope to see at the end of this?
Yeah, okay. So the campaign was started, I launched the campaign in Parliament on World Menopause Day, which is October the 18th, last year. So we're just about 6 months in. And the campaign has three aims. So the first one is to introduce mandatory menopause training for every GP. The second one is to have menopause guidance within every workplace to have better awareness and support for women in the workplace. And the third one is to introduce menopause into the PSHE curriculum in schools, because currently they talk about periods, they talk about pregnancy, and that's where it stops. And for me, and for a lot of other people, it just makes sense that if you teach every young man and young woman about menopause, they will all have older relatives and friends around them. So that will give them an awareness and hopefully an understanding. The women will all go through it. The men will all have women in their lives, whether that is as partners, as friends, as work colleagues.
Yeah, daughters, mothers, everything.
Yeah,
exactly.
Absolutely. So if we all have a greater awareness and understanding, we don't have to have a depth of understanding, but at least if we know what it is, when it happens, and how and where a woman can get some help and support, that totally makes sense. So if we start from that baseline, we have a better informed public, we have a better informed GP practice, we have a better informed employer, then that would just make life so much easier for everybody else. More empathy and compassion can never be a bad thing. So that's the aims of the campaign. Essentially, we've got just over 17,000 signatures so far. I have had myself and a group, including, I think you spoke to Jane Lewis a few weeks ago. Jane came along with me. We had a couple of doctors. We had a couple of fellow campaigners come along to a meeting with the MP, a lady called Rachel McLean, who's been really supportive of the campaign. and she had arranged a round table meeting with one of the ministers from the Department of Health, a lady called Jackie Doyle Price. That was a really useful meeting where we were able to really focus on the health issues around menopause. As a result of that meeting, Jackie has asked us to form a focus group. We're going to have another meeting to look at menopause in the workplace. Rachel has, she's raised each of the issues in debates in the House of Commons, which is brilliant. She even asked a question in Prime Minister's Question Time.
Yeah, get in there. What did Theresa May have a hot flash during it?
And got the Prime Minister to say menopause and was very supportive, et cetera, et cetera. So the thing is, this is a subject that has never really been raised in Parliament before, shockingly. So we've had a backbench debate, which is the first backbench debate on menopause. So it's just about raising the awareness, raising the issues. We've now got initiatives going, looking at menopause in the workplace, looking at menopause in healthcare. I've had a meeting with a couple of colleagues with the Royal College of Obstetricians and Gynecologists and the Royal College of GPs. My colleague, Dr. Louise Newson, is doing a lot of work trying to help with materials to educate GPs. We're starting to have the conversation around including this in the PSHE curriculum. I know Rachel has recently met with the education secretary. So, you know, kind of from small acorns, you know, we're starting to grow some shoots, which is great.
Have you come up against any obstacles, like either personally, like with frustration or like just lack of interest? Because one of the problems I'm finding is one, it's difficult to be the spokesperson for something that's just not sexy, not cool, you know, like, but two, that, like, you know, in a very male-centered world that we're in, like, it's not of interest to them at all. And it's like, oh, here they go again. And I find that even though we can rise above that noise, I know that we're all capable of that. I'm just wondering if on a personal and professional level, you've come up against any obstacles.
I mean, on a personal, nobody has sort of said, oh, you know, kind of really enough, et cetera, et cetera. We've heard it all before, blah, blah, blah. I have to say the thing that I probably see the most is comments. So, you know, there's quite a lot in the press at the moment. And there has been for the last sort of 18 months or so since we've been, you know, sort of really pushing this. There's quite a lot of press articles on this, etc. And the thing that I probably find the most disturbing is those women who have had a fairly symptom-free menopause, who have kind of got through it, and you'll see comments like, oh, for goodness sake, really, I got through it, just push on, you know, I don't know what's wrong with you. Or I did a radio program the other day and talking about menopause, and an older lady came on and she said, oh, I don't know what's wrong with these young women, you know, we all got through it. And it's sort of, do you know what? Just because it's been hard in the past, it shouldn't be hard now. We don't say, you know, sort of, well, let's not have anything improved. Let's all just suffer. And of course, what we know, if we look back historically, is we probably had an awful lot of women who did their menopause behind closed doors and had an awful time. So that doesn't mean that women should have to do that now. That's not progressive. So it does annoy me to kind of see this thing of, oh, for goodness sake, because I think it doesn't take into account the differences. You know, for some women, yeah, great. Some women don't have very many symptoms. That's wonderful. Great for them. But I don't think we should be judging everybody else's experience by our own. And as I said before, I think a little bit more empathy and compassion, and I don't just mean in menopause, I think we could do a bit more with that, you know, kind of around the world at the moment. But I think a bit more of that goes a long way. And of course, one of the things that a lot of women struggle with is not being heard, whether that's not being heard in the workplace, whether that's not being heard by their GP, you know, when they go in with their symptoms and they're told, oh, you're stressed and depressed, you need antidepressants. And they know they're not depressed, but they don't understand what's going on for them. So the last thing they need to hear is, oh, for goodness sake, I got on with it. You should be able to do it. I don't know what you're complaining about.
Yeah, it's those dismissive comments are very insulting. I understand that. Yeah,
absolutely. So yeah. I think from a, you know, kind of from a personal point of view, that's the thing that I think it just frustrates me. But from the wider point of view, you know, there's actually been quite a lot of support, you know, sort of more widely. And interestingly, I wrote a piece for my website called Understanding Menopause for Men, because as you said earlier, it is tough. It is difficult to understand. If you've not experienced, you know, the hormonal fluctuations of a monthly cycle, etc., then how on earth are you supposed to understand those deeper fluctuations of menopause? So I wrote an article about it. And it's really interesting the amount of feedback I've had from that, from men saying, thank you so much. That's really helped me to understand. Recently, I've actually done a couple of private consultation sessions with men, because they're men who are getting in contact saying, I don't know how to help my wife. Could you help me to help her? And I think that's really progressive and really forward thinking, and that's what we need more of.
Yeah, and especially through the mental health side of menopause, because the physical stuff, I think women are pretty robust and resilient, even though it sucks and it shouldn't need to, and there's things they can do to help themselves. It's the emotional and mental component that are very difficult for anybody else to help you with, or even understand, especially like you say, when you can't understand it yourself. So you've now got 17,000 signatures. I'm going to make sure that the link to Make Menopause Matters is within, you know, this podcast, so people can go over and sign up. It's a very quick thing to do. Can you tell me, Diane, like, have you got like an end date on this? Is it an ongoing campaign?
Ongoing. Yeah, it's right. Ongoing, lovely, because essentially, you know, kind of those three aims of the campaign, until they're met, this campaign will go on.
It's an evolving campaign.
Absolutely. Good. And I'm hoping, you know, sort of that I'm hoping that as we, you know, I started it, but as far as I'm concerned, this is, you know, anybody that is involved with menopause, talks about menopause, campaigns for menopause, it's not a campaign for me. It's our campaign. It's for all of us. It's for all of us. It's for all the women that come after us. So, exactly. You know, there's an awful lot of people that are sort of helping to support it. So it's very much an our campaign.
Yeah, that's so great. And I would love to see this evolving across the oceans.
Oh, you know, sure we can do something about that.
I think it's really important, because I see that there's a gap. There's a gap, and then what happens over here, and I see this all the time, is women like not getting the support from their GP. So you can actually access hormones online. And I know that's a whole other conversation, but women in their desperation are looking for other sources, and it becomes a point where it's expensive, it's not safe, and they're in territory unknown with their health. And I think that just getting the GPs on board is so, so essential. More than anything, I think, is one, and then just getting women supported and helped. I love everything you're doing. Continue to do it. I'll get everybody to go over. You've got a website called Menopause Support. It's definitely it's based in the UK, but the information is definitely relevant to any man or woman who wants to read about it. I encourage anyone listening to go over to the Make Menopause Matter campaign and sign it. Let's just keep raising the awareness of this, and thank you for everything you do, Diane.
My absolute pleasure, lovely. It's been really good to speak to you.
Yeah, great. Thanks for coming on the show, and thank you, everybody, for listening. Take care for now. Thanks for listening to the show. For more information on my services, head over to my website at fitandchips.com. That's like fish and chips, FITNCHIPS.com. Or you can head over to my Fit and Chips Facebook page too. If you leave me a comment or if you contact me, I promise I'll do my best to respond to all of your questions. The views and advice expressed by myself in this show are not a substitute for conventional medical service. No information here should be interpreted as a medical diagnosis, treatment, or prevention of any disease. If in any doubt, always go straight to your doctor. Take care. Love you. Bye.